Here we go. So who are you?
My name's Shane Riley, and I am... I'm the owner of the Autism Reality Experience, and I'm an autism educator.
What is the Autism Reality Experience?
The Autism Reality Experience is a simulator that was created by a company in the UK called Training to Care. We've operated an autism organization for about 6 to 7 years now, all around my cousin Austin, who's the world's first professional race car driver with autism, and we started traveling, telling the world about his story. And it all started with a tour. It just went on in North America. It was 3 months long, and we thought it was going to be the only one of our life. We thought it was going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It turned into, we've now been to 9 countries. One of those trips took us to England. We were asked to come speak at the Brunel University in London, and that's where I met the company Training to Care. They had a simulator on outside of the event, and it said Autism Reality Experience on it. I'm a very adventurous person. Not much will deter me from trying new things, so I saw that and I stood in line right away, by myself. I went through the experience, I emerged a blubbering mess. I was in a puddle of my own tears, and afterwards you're supposed to go through a debrief where they talk about what you went through, and I was too emotional to do that. I ended up running back inside to the university, finding Austin, and giving him a huge hug and saying I'm sorry, because I realized that I didn't understand what he was really going through and that I caused him so many of his issues. I was the cause, not him, because I didn't understand how the environment and how the atmosphere and how I was affecting his emotions. I asked him and his father to come and follow me to go try it for themselves. Jason Austin's dad also emerged in tears, and Austin emerged with a big smile on his face, like, ah, now you guys know. Very quickly I understood that this was something we had to bring to Canada. So we built a partnership with that company, Training to Care, and they licensed us for Canada. And we brought that experience to Canada about 13 months ago. And we launched that in a tour across Canada. So the Autism Reality Experience is a simulator. It simulates sensory overload. So one aspect of autism, it's not all-encompassing, but it's one aspect, and it's enough of a shock, it's enough of a perception change that I'm able to build off of that. So I can expose someone to the Autism Reality Experience, give them an idea of what sensory overload feels like by stimulating all 8 of their senses simultaneously. Create a very confusing environment where they are no longer able to perform simple tasks that they take for granted day to day. And in that sense of defeat, they realize how impactful autism is. We can all understand the words autism, or we can read a book and we can understand the context, but to actually feel the emotion of what that is completely different. It's a whole new level of understanding. It's completely immersive. It completely changed everything I thought about autism, and I'm thankful to say that everybody who's come out of it has also had that same emotion. So slowly, 50 people a day is what we're able to get through that simulator. We are changing the perception around autism. We're creating a greater understanding of what it really is, and helping professionals and parents, teachers who work with people with autistic people every single day, helping them better understand what the autistic experience is so that they can better meet the needs of the people they're working with, and also understand certain things about behaviors, and that we deem behaviors to be something that we need to correct, but we need to correct them based on our perception, not theirs. The behaviors that some families and organizations are trying to correct are behaviors that are helping people cope. And the only reason they want to correct them is because they deem them not socially acceptable or not appropriate. But from that person's perspective who's displaying the behaviors, it's completely normal to them. And if that person were to look at us and see that we nod our head at each other, or that we have have certain mannerisms that they don't understand. How would you feel if we wanted to correct those?
That's why I don't like ABA.
That's what the autism reality.
That's my own political hoopla. But it's interesting that you're showing a different perspective on autism. What is autism?
It's actually a question I ask almost every person I meet that comes to the simulator. It's how I start most of my sessions, because I get a lot of people who have been in the industry for years and years and years sitting in front of me. And it serves two purposes. I want to understand where their understanding is, and I want to see how well they're able to articulate their thoughts. So one of the first questions I ask is, what is, in your own words, what is autism? And about 90% of people can't answer. That's what I mean about, we can read a book, read the context, but to have a true understanding of what it is, not a lot of people have it. And that's scary, because autistic people struggle, there's a better way to say that. Society struggles to understand and comprehend the messages that the autistic world is trying to send. It's not that we rely so heavily on verbal communication that when someone struggles to communicate verbally, and that's not their primary form of communication. Verbal communication is the most efficient form of communication. It's why we rely on it so quickly. It's why we develop so quickly. It's why, because we learn so much from each other. When you struggle to verbalize or articulate verbally, society isn't receptive to anything else but that. We become numb to all of the other senses. And we're at our point now where we don't really think they exist. We don't even acknowledge them.
Alright, how would you like drinks? Yeah.
You have a...
We're doing good here?
Yep.
Thank you.
You have a group of individuals who struggle to communicate verbally or struggle to get their message across. And they're being represented by parents, support workers, therapists, who all don't have a real understanding of what that person's going through, so the advocates are misinformed. So by giving them a real experience of what autism is, so autism is a neurodevelopmental disorder that you are born with. It is uncurable. There are a lot of treatments out there, but it affects the way somebody progresses and processes information through their life. So what it is basically a different type of operating system. We all have our own individual operating strategies that are unique to us, but the similarities between us are powerful enough that we can make a lot of assumptions about each other based on ourselves. And those assumptions, when they ring true, the conversation and the communication and the interaction is very fluid. When we have dissimilarities in our sensory systems and our sensory profile and the way we process information, what happens is that the interaction becomes very inorganic. It's no longer fluid. We're not meeting each other at the same level. We're not communicating in a way that is conducive to both of us understanding each other, because we're speaking relatively different languages. And it could be English, but as far as what my body is doing, what my hands are doing, how I assume that you are receptive to what I'm doing with my hands as I try to explain things, or you're following along with more variations in my voice and the way I'm putting my sentences together. But that's not true for everybody. And the more dissimilar someone's sensory profile is, the more unreceptive they're going to be to the way I am communicating. And I need to be able to modify the way I communicate in order to be able to communicate effectively with my autistic person. I need to understand who they are, how their sensory systems work, and what sort of things they are too sensitive to or hyposensitive to, undersensitive to. And by understanding the behaviors, the mannerisms, and starting to understand their sensory profile is the best way to start to communicate with someone else.
Who is Austin?
Who's Austin?
Who is Austin?
Who's Austin? Austin is... He's my little... He's actually a lot taller than me. He's my cousin. The relationship we have is pretty much brothers. He has obviously been in my life his entire life, so he's going to be 20 years old when we're on tour. He's going to turn 20 on tour. He started racing go-karts when he was 7, and this will be his third season coming up now of racing cars. So 3 years ago, he became the world's first professional race car driver with autism. And he's racing in a series, and he is the only one with a disability, and he's always been the only one racing with a disability in his series, like all the way through go-karting, everywhere. It wasn't until about 4 years after he started racing that we went public and actually announced that he did have a disability, because we were met with a lot of protest, and parents were, you know, we'd hear comments like, he shouldn't be on track, he's not safe, he's not allowed, like, it was all safety concerns, and it all came down to a lack of understanding. Like, the parents can't be faulted for those statements, because it is just a lack of education, a lack of understanding. So the more I see these issues come around through life as I mentor Austin through his life, the more I see the limiting understanding of autism is holding him back. Other people's limits of understanding are holding him back. And if they're holding him back, they might be holding everybody back. So that's why Austin and myself joined forces and started this business, Autism Reality Experience, together. And now he is a trainer. So he actually operates the simulator by himself, which frees me up to be able to do debriefs and actually deliver lessons afterwards. So he meets 50 new people every day that we work. It's been very interesting. It's been a very interesting learning process for me, trying to get him to do a job that is demanding and have him be consistent with it. He has very interesting ways of understanding people's language. So to meet 50 people in a day is very overwhelming for him, because he has 50 voices resonating in his mind all day long. So teaching him strategies to overcome that has been very, very, very interesting and beneficial for both of us, because he's getting more strategies out of it and I'm learning a lot more about him.
Right, yeah. I would be scared meeting 50 people in a day. But for him, that would just be overwhelming.
It'd be crazy. So we have a couple routines in the morning when we're getting ready. We're really silly, we dance a lot. We're in the simulator by ourselves, so we're setting everything up. That's a lot of fun. At the end of the day, he has a certain movie he likes to put on, because we have a TV in the simulator. So as soon as that last person gets out of the door, he puts that movie on, and it's a comedy. Same movie every time. And it's just a way for us to laugh and joke and repeat lines with each other and kind of decompress after the day. So teaching him like transitional strategies like that, where we can be doing one thing, but our mind can be playful and having fun because of this. Or we have a job to do, but this can be on in the background and we can be silly while it's going on.
Wow, what has been the response of this?
The Autism Reality Experience?
Yeah.
Overwhelmingly powerful. I'll actually show you a picture here. I started a new strategy last week. For the first time, what I did was I brought a whiteboard in with me. And on the whiteboard I wrote, I feel. And then I handed it to people as they came out of the simulator and asked them to write exactly what they feel. So this is inside the Autism Reality Experience. This is like the front room of it. So that was the principal, and she wrote overwhelmed. That's a mother and a teacher. So she has a son with autism, and she's also an autism teacher because of her son. And she came out in tears and wrote heartbroken, because she realized that she didn't understand what her son was going through, and she didn't realize how traumatic even the home environment can be. Because one of our simulators is in a home environment, and it teaches you how just simple kitchen noises and a vacuum can be too much for somebody. And those are things, like, the home is supposed to be a safe place. Home is supposed to be the one place you're able to go that is not dangerous and not overwhelming. It's supposed to be comforting. And the way we have this set up is that the home is no longer comfortable because of these things that we don't even recognize. So getting people to make those connections about how our environment can affect how we feel is huge. So these are two more teachers, alone and overwhelmed. Educated, sad but hopeful, like I want to know more now. Dizzy, queasy, unbalanced, uncoordinated, and the other teacher wrote overwhelmed, confused, hard time remembering, queasy, loud, and shaky. These two, informed, overwhelmed, helpful, and optimistic. So, a lot of the responses are negative. They feel terrible. They're reflecting on themselves and they're beating themselves up, which is exactly what I went through. When I went through it for the first time, I was crying and I felt like I had failed Austin. It took me a while to overcome that and realize we all do the best with what we have at the time, and that this simulator offered me more tools for my toolbox, and now I have a better understanding, now I can do better. So I stopped beating myself up when I realized that I had more tools, and that's what I try to teach everybody who comes through, not to beat themselves up, but to understand that we all do the best we can with what we have, and now you have more. So go out there and use it.
I read on Facebook, there's an activist, and an activist is someone who sees something and acts upon it to improve society or improve something, versus a warrior and sees something broken and just says, it's broken, go fix it. Mm-hmm. Whereas
one is proactive, the other one's reactive.
Right. And so I think this is proactive and more of like an activist stance.
I would agree. We're not trying to react to anything. I saw a need, I saw a benefit, and I wanted to share it. That's as simple as it gets.
Yeah. So, like, because I have it recording, can you explain how you got to making this autism virtual reality experience?
What do you mean by how I got to it?
Or like what inspired you to do this?
I think it was a perfect storm. And earlier when we were talking about, you know, without the bitter, the sweet just ain't as sweet. I went through a really, really, really hard time in my life. So I worked for Caterpillar for 11 years. That employment came to an abrupt end. The last couple years were really not good. I ended up going on disability because of harassment that I was experiencing through work. And I was deeply depressed. I worked a shift that was very different from everybody else. I was the only one on that shift. I worked Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Every day on Friday, I came to work and my boss would recommend me for something. This went on for 8 weeks straight. I would walk in and he would tell me that I screwed something up, I did something wrong, he didn't think I did it right. It would just be scrutiny every single first day of my shift. And then for the rest of the week, I was by myself. So the only socializing I got at work was completely negative, telling me I'm no good. And this started to have an effect on me. And I brought this up to my boss, and it just continued and got worse and worse. Nothing changed. I wasn't making mistakes, but he was scrutinizing everything I did. So I ended up writing a letter to HR, which led to me going on short-term disability after they refused to investigate. And while I was on short-term disability, I got terminated. That was my 11-year career that I ended up needing to sell my house because I could no longer afford it, because I had been off work for 6 months already on reduced income, and then I lost my job, lost my house, and that perpetuated the problem. I even went further into the hole. watching Austin go through all he has to face, and to see him break down and then get back up and keep striving towards his dream gave me the strength to do the same. Like, in everything that I had gone through with work, I realized I know exactly how I don't want to structure a company. I know exactly how I don't want to treat people. I understand the effects of being positive to your employees versus negative. And I wanted to build something of my own. I wanted to start a new family, a new culture, a new business with a better mission where I could actually take care of people. So while I build this, we're still in the early stages. We're in the first year. I want to maintain my workforce at 50% autistic. I want the voice of autistic people to be heard from them. I just want to be the one who's able to bridge the gap. I can say all I want about autism, I can teach as many people as I want. It's nowhere near as powerful as coming from the mouth or from somebody who lives with it every single day. So Austin and I are a team. He runs the simulator, I do the training, and that's the kind of structure I would like to continue to build in what we're doing.
Lovely. And you said that you, earlier, that you tried something similar in England.
Yep.
As well. So that was...
So that... What we built here is a replica of what they created in the UK. And what they created in the UK was built off of the virtual dementia training simulator. It's been around for probably 15 years or so now. It's a similar concept of how it's all put together, and it's the same immersive experience. It's trying to give someone a representation of what someone goes through in that position. It's role play. And it's more powerful to walk in someone's shoes than it is to sit there and hear about them.
Have you gotten any criticisms from this?
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate? Once you finish chewing.
When you asked if I get criticisms, I was very quick to say yes, because they're always in my mind. I haven't had many, but the ones I have had, I take very seriously. And not because I'm defensive, because I want to make sure, as with everything I do, everyone has a proper understanding of what we do. The majority of the criticisms have come from the autistic world, have come from individuals who live with it every single day. And it's more, every single criticism I've gotten is a point form list of their concerns. It's not saying I've done anything wrong, it's that these are what I'm worried about. Can you answer my questions? And every single one of those that I have responded to has come back and said, I'm so thankful you're doing what you're doing. So the criticisms have come, the questions have come, and then all the worries are put to ease because I explain exactly what our mission is, why we're doing it, what our approach is, and they are so pleased to hear that it's different than anything else. I did receive a criticism from a mother who came in with her adult son, who was autistic. She was his advocate. She spoke for him. She did everything for him. Not because he wasn't able, because she wanted to. They sat in the simulator together. They went through the session. She did not complete the tasks. She did not participate. So about 30% of people who come through don't actually perform the tasks because they're so confused. They don't understand what is expected of them. And she was one of those individuals. At the end of it, she took her gear off and then decided to take it out on me. And told me that this was terrible that I put something like this together. How dare I represent autism like this? This is not what my son goes through. She was very, very displeased with me because she felt like I was misrepresenting autism. Her son stood up. She was still sitting. He stood up on the bench, like stood up at the bench, looked at her and said, "Mom, this is my life every day." And she broke down and started crying.
So you have a really positive experience.
It was like that was the biggest criticism I ever received. Like face to face, someone telling me that I'm not accurate, that this is not real, that you're fake. And then someone who lives with it stood up in front of her own son, and told her that she was wrong, that this is his life, this is what he lives through. That stuck with me. That was on our tour. That was when I launched the business. That was like in the very early days. That'll always stay with me.
Looks like it touches you like every single day. Like,
it does.
And it touches a lot of people, I think. Which is good, like it to be so.
Like, we do so much to hide from our emotions, and we're taught, at least as men, you know, we're raised in a society that looks down on someone who's able to express emotion. Men are supposed to be tough and fearless and you know, thick-skinned. That only causes us problems. Because we need to talk about how we feel, and I'm always very upfront, and all of my emotions live out for everybody to see because they're real. So when something like that happens, it means something to me, and if I tell the story, I go back to where I was that day, and I want you to understand what that felt like, what that was for me. I relive it over and over again.
It was
a very important day.
All right, well, thank you for your day.
Excuse me.
It's a big risk to go and start your own business, especially having gone through what I went through and being in the mindset I was in. To take it on the road across the, like, huge, huge risk, huge undertaking. And then to have someone who lives with it every day justify what I do. That was huge. To know that family is going to go on and have a difference in their life from that day forward because of something I did. I was able to create a better understanding for that young man. I was able to represent him without him having to communicate anything. That was awesome.
And I heard that you're coming across Canada, which is amazing. And you're stopping in Vancouver.
Yes.
Even better. When are you stopping in Vancouver?
I believe our first event in Vancouver is March 25th, 2019. And we're going to be in the Vancouver area for about 2 weeks. It's the longest stint we have in any one town. Selfishly, I love Vancouver, so I did that on purpose. I'm sorry about the prairies. they've got only a week to themselves. But Vancouver is, it's somewhere where Austin and I love to be. It's a beautiful place. And we've got some room in our schedule where we want to explore and we want to take some time to ourselves on this tour and actually create an experience for ourselves. And to document a lot of it and share it with people.
Yeah. Going back to Austin, how did he get into race car driving?
That's an interesting story. Austin was brought up with some heavy influences in his life, myself and his father, Jason. We are gearheads. I love cars. I've always loved cars. I love racing. Yeah. And that's all because of his father, Jason, and the influence he had on me. So Jason, when I was growing up, he's the youngest of my father's side, of all the brothers. So him and I are close in age. So he was like a big brother for me. When Austin was born, I was 12. I remember being in the hospital and Jason saying to me, "You know all that cool stuff we did while you were growing up? Now it's your turn." And kind of like passing the torch. So Austin and I always had I've always had toys and cars, and he's always with me, and we go to car shows, and we do all that kind of stuff. So he's always been around that world. Jason bought him a Power Wheels Jeep when he was younger, when he was like 5 years old. And Austin would come home from work, or come home from school every day, and he had a routine. And he would get in his Jeep, and he would drive all the way to the end of the block. He was not allowed to cross any streets. He would turn around, he would come all the way back to the other end of the block, he would turn around all the way to the end, and he would do that until it was time to go to bed. So about 4 to 5 hours every day. And we'd have to have 2 to 3 batteries spare, on charge, ready to switch over so that he can keep going. Do you know how hard it was back then, before Amazon, to find replacement wheels for a Power Wheels Jeep? These were plastic wheels that he used to wear right through and wear them into two halves and still try to drive on them. So he always had a natural knack for driving. He always had a passion for it. And it wasn't until a piece of junk mail came in to the mail at their house. And it was an arrive and drive go-kart program. And we had already tried Austin in soccer, in baseball, in hockey, all of these things, and he just basically sat down and didn't want to participate. He was not interested. So we were trying to find something for him to do to work on his social skills, because his school life was terrible. Like, he was getting picked on, he'd come home with ripped clothes, and it was not a happy place for him. So we're trying to find something outside. We thought this was going to be a perfect fit. Showed it to him? No. He said no. He says, in essence, like, I'll summarize what he was trying to communicate, but basically, he hasn't been successful at anything. He's failed at everything. Why should I keep trying? I don't want to try this because I'm just going to get made fun of. I don't want to get made fun of anymore. So he said no. It took 4 weeks of talking to him every day about it to get him to agree, give in, that he was going to go out there. Austin's a bit of a master negotiator. The deal he struck: I'll go out there, I will do one lap, I'm going to come off, we're going to get in the vehicle, we're going to go home, we're never going to speak about it again, and we are going for ice cream on the way back. Done. Deal. True to his word, jumped in a go-kart, no instructions, he just headed out there. And he must have spun out 20 times, ended up on the grass. But he didn't come off after one lap. Kept going around. And the checkered flag came out. Everybody filed off and came off the track for Austin. Kept going around. Around the track. Marshals are out there and they're trying to dodge and stop him. And he's deking around them and kept going around. And there's Jason on the sidelines being like, why is it always my son? Why am I always getting embarrassed? Because all of the parents on the fence are like, who's that kid? What's wrong with him? Where's his parents? What is going on here? Why is this child on? Why is he here? Basically getting discriminated against because he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. At the time, our understanding of autism, at the time, Austin hadn't been diagnosed yet. So he got into a go-kart before he was ever diagnosed. Jason was so embarrassed and so angry that he made his way out onto the track and he had to physically stop Austin. And he was getting ready to yell at him because of how embarrassed he was. He wanted Austin to feel what he felt. He wanted to give him that experience of walking in someone else's shoes because it is so powerful. And when Austin stopped 5 feet short of him, Jason's right about to yell at him, but through the helmet, you can just see that he's so lit up. He's so ecstatic. He's so happy. And Jason said he had never seen him that happy before. He didn't yell at him. They went home that day, but all Austin would ever talk about from that day forward was, when can we go back? When can we do it again? So Austin finished second last that day. But that was the only race that year he didn't finish in the top three. They returned the next week and he was a different person. He understood that he needed to get to the front of the pack instead of just out there having fun. At the end of the year, he won a scholarship to race the next year in his own go-kart, and that began his racing career. People kept seeing potential in him and wanting to get behind him, and we've just signed a new sponsor this year. It's our biggest sponsor ever, and we're happy to say that His racing season for the 2019 season is completely taken care of. So we don't have any financial worry anymore on that side of things. It's been so draining on our family, keeping him racing. Racing is a very expensive endeavor. Getting into cars, you're looking at $80,000 to $90,000 a year just to race. And if you don't have sponsorship, that's coming out of your pocket.
How did you guys realize that Austin had autism?
He was actually misdiagnosed. He was diagnosed with ADHD, fine motor skill impairment, and severe anxiety. And it wasn't until we met a teacher. I believe it was his grade 3 teacher, Mrs. Rodich. Still friends with her to today. She has a son who's also on the spectrum and said, I believe in Austin's diagnosis, but I also think there's something else going on, and I strongly suggest you have him reassessed.
I'll be right back.
And that's where the Austin diagnosis came from.
I was also misdiagnosed with a language-based learning issue.
Yep.
And someone said to me, it looks like, I don't think it is language-based. I think it's nonverbal. I went, okay. So I Googled it.
How old were you when you were told that?
19. So I was much older.
Yep.
And I Googled it. Found out it wasn't nonverbal, and the website that I looked at said, if it doesn't sound like you, but kind of, try this. And I did, and I realized that it was dyspraxia. So that was
great.
That is very interesting. The only other person I've ever met who's been diagnosed with dyspraxia is the owner, Glenn Knight, of Training Camp. Actually, I'm not sure if he was officially diagnosed.
And that happens a lot.
It was one of his trainers that I was working with who was a specialist in it who identified that quality of
him. Yeah. Oops. Who knew, right? They also thought I had cerebral palsy until I crawled.
Well, I have a theory about, like, these are diagnoses, but really all they are is labels. They're titles that define something. And they serve a purpose, but we also need to identify their limiting ability. And that when we label something, we're essentially saying that is as far as our understanding goes. Dyspraxia, autism, any sort of diagnosis, it's all based on your perception as to whether it's going to be a good diagnosis or a bad diagnosis. Because if you look at it in a positive light, being diagnosed with dyspraxia is just more information. It's just a better understanding of who you are. It's not a bad thing, it's the reality. And the reality is that you now know more about yourself.
Yep.
And you can now better understand how to navigate them. Whereas you get families who are with a child diagnosed as autistic. Oh, that's terrible. And we don't understand the power. Very few people understand the power of influence at that young age. And that just your mindset, not something specific that you've said, just the way you respond, the energy you give off based on your thoughts towards autism, will mold your child. If you have a negative connotation towards autism your whole life, and you raise a child in an environment like that, it's going to have an effect. I've seen it. Whereas other families who have a positive light on it, those children progress in a much different way. Because they have a better support system. Can you imagine everybody looking down on you based on who you are? Autism is integral to people's identity. It's not a condition. It's not a disease. It's not something you can cure. It's ingrained in who they are. It's their operating system. It's their mind. It's themselves. It identifies who they are, and to have people look at that in a negative light, that's gotta feel terrible.
I had a teacher, a kindergarten teacher, who told my parents I'd be illiterate my whole life, and a grade one teacher who said that I was not the brightest of students.
Yep.
I went back to that grade one teacher, and she goes, "So where are you now?" I look at her, I go, "I'm in my master's degree." How do you like them apples?
Well, that all comes down to the education system is catered to a certain type of mindset. And we can't have the same rules for everybody because everybody's different. So in schools, we're trying to teach people a certain way in a certain environment that's favorable to neurotypical society, whereas someone who's neurodiverse or has different sensory needs doesn't strive and isn't set up for success in that environment. So they can deem you are going to be delayed, you are not going to excel, you are not going to achieve based on the criteria you've set up for neurotypical. But if you don't fit in that category, that opinion means nothing, because your potential, your abilities are very different than everybody else's. You need to be able to identify that. You need to be able to encourage that.
My younger brother also has, one of my younger brothers also has learning issues, and now is in his PhD. So, he's in PhD at U of T.
Yeah.
And he is in fluid dynamics.
Fluid dynamics.
It's popular though.
What is your brother's learning experience?
I've never heard
it was like it's officially also language based like me. But I think it's more nonverbal, but on the milder side of nonverbal. So
you know what? I'll consider it in the room.
Okay. Alright, here we are.
It causes is the understanding there in his faculty, like in his
He understands what's going on.
Alright, so you're gonna
and why
do they understand him?
Yeah, fries?
I think they do because he has some type of accreditation, and he is not only does he have those learning issues, but he's also what's the word where you're like genius, almost genius level,
savant.
I think in like savant kind of thing. So he's really good at math, and that's.
And it comes naturally. It's not theoretical math. It's math that is just ingrained in his understanding.
Yeah. So at 3 years old, he could count up to 10. Like, no 3 year old, average 3 year old could do that. So he's very smart. His fiance likes to knit, and she'll go to him and she goes, "Count this," and he'll just go, "Yep, that's," or "Multiply this," and he'll just do it for her.
It's incredible skill.
For her.
Lucas? I think it's Lucas? I can't remember if it is Lucas. I don't think, no, it wasn't Lucas. But it was at PAFN. I met an autistic boy there who was able to recite dates of the year from years and years back. I can't remember what the name of that ability is, but it was incredible to witness. I couldn't Google it that fast. Unreal.
Why do you say autistic instead of being on the autism spectrum or with autism?
Good question. It's something I'm recently trying to transition, so you catch me saying both right now. I'm trying to lean more towards autistic. When I came through a different life. I didn't grow up in a world where I was learning about autism by professionals. I'm self-taught, and I've been influenced by the people around me. So when I first started to understand what autism was, I was told that the correct way to say it is with autism. That is the polite way to say it. Through these last 6 or 7 years and talking to as many people as possible who are autistic, I'm more concerned with what they want than anything else. And the narrative that I receive from them, and the way that I understand, is that with autism, and it makes perfect sense to me now, with autism, it's not a very flattering term, because here's the person, and they've got some autism. So this person is not a person, they're a person, and they've got some autism. And it's a negative connotation. Whereas you say an autistic person, autistic refers to the processing of information. They have an autistic mindset, they are autistic. They think like an autistic. And whenever I've listened to TED Talks or podcasts of autistic people, they always refer to themselves as autistics or autis or some sort of form of that word. They never refer to themselves as someone with autism. So I need to change my language in order to meet the proper representation of what they want.
What are your feelings on the different therapies out there?
I'm not sure I know enough to accurately comment on it. A lot of my clients are ADA therapists, and I think that's really good. Because I've met a lot of autistic people who don't like ABA therapies. And the intentions are good. ABA therapy comes from a good place. But I think what's missing from it is the humanized understanding of how someone is feeling when you're trying to correct their behaviors and why you're trying to correct their behaviors. What that behavior that you're trying to correct, truly understanding a couple things about it. What does it serve the person? Not so much as whether I'm avoiding or I want or I want attention or I'm trying to meet a sensory need. At the end of the day, all four criteria of what an ABA therapist is trying to evaluate is a sensory need. Our brains use all of our sensory systems to understand and interpret the world around us. Every behavior is serving some sort of sensory need. If I'm saying I don't want, the reason why I'm saying I don't want is because my sensory system is telling me that it doesn't taste good. If I'm saying I do want, I'm craving, well, that's my sensory system saying I'm hungry. That's my interoceptive system saying I have a feeling inside my stomach that wants me to eat this. I have a craving. Things are too loud for me, I might create a behavior that is stimming to try and take my attention away from all the noise or overstimulation around me. I'm trying to desensitize all my other systems by hyper-focusing on something else. By understanding the reasons why someone goes through that, how traumatic those sensory inputs can be to cause a behavior, I think is often overlooked. And we just see the behavior as, this is not socially acceptable, this is not looked upon in a positive way by society, so we need to stop it without really understanding what the person's going through in the first place to exhibit it. And this comes from meeting with as many autistics as possible and asking very important questions about how they feel, and how does it feel when people do this, and how does it feel when people do that. Getting that information has been so good for me to help understand where I'm needed or where this understanding is needed. So as far as the different therapy methods go, I think they all come from a positive place, but I think we need to expand our understanding.
How has the, what is the response with Austin's family creating this reality experience?
Austin's father and me have been partners in this since the beginning. I don't think they could be more proud of where he is and what he's doing now, and to see that this is a young man now who they never thought would amount to anything.
So
when he was first diagnosed with autism, they didn't know what it meant, and they didn't think he would ever finish school or be able to drive a car or have a job or any of those things. And he's done every single one of them. He's not even 20 yet. He's broken down so many barriers in everything that we do. I think they're filled with pride. Proud of who he has become and where he's going to go.
Wow. Does he have younger siblings?
He has an older sister, Courtney.
Oh, okay. And that must be amazing. Like, she must be so proud of him as well.
She is. I mentioned earlier we started ice racing this winter. She got to go for a ride in the ice racing car around the track in a race with him last weekend for the first time ever in a car with him.
Oh, wow.
And I was able to capture that on video. So I'll be putting out a video about that soon.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
And so the whole family really is rallying behind him.
The whole family is in support of Austin, and it takes a lot of attention and a lot of travel, but his mom and his sister come to every race they can, and his father and I are running the race team, so we keep the wheels turning.
That's amazing.
It's a unique way to go through life, and I love it.
And is he the baby of the family? I have cousins who are about 12 years older than me.
Okay.
So I was one of the babies.
So Austin is 12 years younger than me.
So.
Same time, like same dynamic.
And I was the youngest female. So I was the belle of the ball. Little terrorist, but belle of the ball.
The youngest ones always are.
Yeah. My mom likes to talk about a story where my family had family friends who had boys about the same age as I was. And one of the little boys had a toy that I wanted. So I started beating him up, and he started screaming. So my dad ran to save his little princess, only to find out his little princess. So I was beating up on a little boy. Yeah.
What did you do?
Say that again.
What did your dad do?
Picked me up, but not again. Shook me and put me back down. But so that's what. Yeah.
And if you think about, that's a great example. The behaviors that you were exhibiting at that young age were not desirable.
No.
So how, and rightfully so, those are behaviors that we want to steer away from. We want to be able to teach a better path to achieve the goal that you were trying to achieve, which is acquire the toy. We want to get you to that point through another path that's beneficial for everybody. So how do we go about teaching someone to do that?
Using words instead of beating up some little boys.
Perfect. So that would be something I refer to as a basic concept. That's something that we want every child to understand at a very young age. That is not a desirable behavior, it's not beneficial, it's not good behavior. And the way we go to correct that is verbally. Explain. So what if the individual you're trying to speak to, trying to guide, isn't receptive audibly the way you expect them to be? And if you don't identify that and you rely so heavily on verbal communication, that individual is going to not receive all the information you're trying to give them. They're not going to be able to perform to the expectations you have of them, and they'll fall behind. You find that a lot when children enter school, the school system. Teachers assume that all children arrive with the same basic concepts, and there are certain ones that are going to become evident that they need to work on. But it goes so deep into even more simplistic basic concepts of understanding how other people feel, being polite, understanding other people's emotions, their facial expression, because these are all basic concepts that we never even think about. As an autistic person can sometimes not be receptive to them. And if we don't understand that, we discredit them. We discredit what they're going through, and we say we just need to fix them. When we don't really understand what the problem is in the first place. We don't understand why they're not getting there. All we know is that we need to break them, fix it. I have a friend who I grew up in school with. I'm 32, he's almost 32. And at 29, he was diagnosed with autism. And one of the ways he described ABA therapy to me was it's almost the same strategy that we would use to train a dog, to train the behaviors into a dog. That was heartbreaking. To see that's how he viewed ABA therapy.
Oh, yeah, I was off.
I had a childhood friend, school friend. I'm 31, and she's I want to say about 31, 32, and she was diagnosed late as well. And that's how I got to find you guys, was through her. Yeah. So.
Small world.
Yeah. She really tried to fit into society, and it was quite difficult for her.
Having gone through the depression that I did, and that's another thing, like, I will always talk openly about it, as hard as it is for me to talk about it. I'm definitely not the only one out there who's gone through anything like that, and the more I express that, the more people can relate and understand that they're not broken, that they are okay, they are enough the way they are, and that this is okay to go through and understand what it means and how to overcome it, and that you are strong enough to do that. So that's why I talk about it openly. A lot of people don't, but I want to be able to change that a little bit.
Yeah.
Having gone through what I went through, nobody around me understood. And it's amazing that I was able to make an association with what I went through, how it felt, and relate that to Austin and how he goes through life and how he's been discredited his whole life. And people tell him he's not, what he's feeling isn't right, and what he's going through is wrong, and he's always being told that what he is not okay. Take that to the autistic society, and that's a lot of problems that we're not looking at. That's a lot of negative effect we're having without even realizing it. You know, it's hard to fix a mistake if you don't ever know you've made it. And it's not that we want to punish anybody or reprimand anybody for making mistakes. All we want to do is teach people, give them a better tool set so that they have less chance of making mistakes moving forward. I just want people to be more effective. I want people to be a support system in the best possible way.
Did you guys grow up in Pickering? Or?
I grew up in Toronto.
Okay.
I grew up in Toronto and moved out here last year when I started the business.
Oh, okay.
Cheaper place to live. Last thing I need is a massive amount of overhead.
Yeah. I've never been to Pickering.
It's nice. It's not as busy as Toronto. It's definitely grown over the last 5-10 years. It's huge.
Yeah.
But people are nice. People are good. It's quieter.
Yeah.
There's lots of greenery around. There's lots of trails for running and dog parks. There's a river that runs through here that I run in the summer.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And you guys run your buses in the snow.
This winter, so I launched the business last April, so this is our first winter. I realized very quickly, I did a Northern Ontario tour in the fall. I realized very quickly that the frost inside the unit is not a good thing. So I shut it down for 2 weeks and tore everything down to the skin and I insulated everything. There's no insulation in it. So I took all the cabinets out, all the walls out, all the lights, all the equipment, everything down to the frame, insulated everything and put everything back. And now we're fully insulated and heated.
Oh, thank goodness. Vancouver, we have trolley buses.
Not one.
Say that again.
They're not warm?
They're warm, but these lines that run the trolley buses froze, and the city was meant to put these ice tea breakers on the lines, and they forgot.
Mm-hmm. How did that affect the tram or the bus?
It stopped moving. So instead of 45 minutes to get anywhere, it took an hour and a half.
Did you have to get off, or was it just going really slow?
It was going really slow, and I also had made sure that my routes weren't on trolley buses, were on diesel buses, and the city didn't ice any of the roads.
Salt any of the roads?
Yeah. Salt any of the roads, and we're on Vancouver's a bunch of hills. Those buses really took a toll.
Was that this winter?
Yeah, this winter.
Has this winter been worse than you expected? Like worse than normal?
It's pretty normal, and they do it every. It happens every year.
Well.
So, this.
With everything that I've learned on how our bodies respond to pollution and toxins and how things get into our water, the less salt we use on the roads, the better off, the better I feel we are.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the roads are going to end up snowy and icy. Just need to drive safer and get better equipped vehicles.
Yeah. We have a lot of people coming in from Asia, and they're from warmer climates, so they don't know how, they've never seen snow. And they buy these big honking vehicles, and but they don't know how to drive in snow.
Nope.
So lots of accidents.
That's what I love about ice racing, it teaches you how to drive on ice.
My parents are originally from Winnipeg, so they know how to.
It's a portion of the tour that I am a little. It was so cold there last year, going across the prairies. Too old to do anything.
My cousins used to live there, and of course they're much older than I am. They thought it would be funny because, of course, I'm from Vancouver and it was not as bad as Winnipeg to plop me into the snow. Because, you know, Winnipeg, here you go.
Enjoy.
And I popped my head out with that scowl on my face.
Were you in a snowsuit?
I was.
Okay.
Still. Those 90s snowsuits.
It's the wind, I can't take. And you know what? It's been pretty cold here this year.
Yeah.
We've had some really, really frigid temperatures. Well, the snow makes up for it. I don't mind if it's that cold and there's snow.
Yeah.
But if it's that cold and it's just barren,
I think I have a picture of the snow from this year.